Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokesman.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time Olympics watcher.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And welcome to Movies 101, that show that, as we like to say, seeks out quality film wherever we can find it. This past week took us first to the theater, which was where we saw writer-director Tillman Singer's film Cuckoo, and then to our personal screening rooms where we streamed writer-director Christy Hall's film Daddy-O. Both films, one a study in contemporary horror and the other a study of a chance encounter between two people from far different backgrounds, are studies in how films, as diverse as these two are, attempt to find a means of holding an audience's attention. Let's begin with a film that starts slowly but then begins to boil over with a sense of dread. Well, it does so at least for a while. German-born Tillman Singer is one of those filmmakers who puts his audiences in a situation that feels uncomfortably weird from the start. The setting here is a run-down hotel in the Bavarian Alps. Our protagonist, the surly 17-year-old Gretchen, played by Hunter Schaefer, is brought there by her parents, father, stepmother, and half-sister, and gets caught between their expectations, they're there, we're told, to build a resort, her own inner turmoil involving her absent birth mother, and the machinations of the too-smooth hotel owner, played by Dan Stevens, Herr Koenig. Writer-director Singer lays on the strangeness, from the threatening forest that surrounds them to the periodic moments of time stoppage that throws them all into a kind of ongoing epileptic seizure. And of course, there's the dark glasses-wearing woman who, it turns out, represents the film's bird-themed title. All of this is chilling as long as it remains mysterious. But over the film's final third, Singer's script becomes both too literal and hard to follow, and gradually less scary than merely silly. Haunting, in some ways, but still silly.
Yeah, you know, before this year is over, I'd really like to see a horror thriller that actually delivers on the promise of its first act.
All the way through,
yes. Recurring theme these last couple months, and I just feel like I'm repeating reviews that I've given of Maxine and Longlegs and Trap, the new M. Night Shyamalan movie, because like those, Cuckoo sets itself up so confidently at the beginning and really pulls us in with its dread, yes, but just its sense of atmosphere and weirdness. And it was so confident that I just started to get this sneaking suspicion that once we found out what was really going on, it wasn't going to be satisfying. And I was right about that. I mean, this is one of those movies that sort of has to explain itself and...
But doesn't
at the same time. And what it does explain is, as you said, it is kind of silly. I suppose if you just kind of go with it, it's fun. But I also think, and maybe it's because, you know, I saw the trailer a million times and it has all these quotes from people saying, it's so insane, it goes off the rails, it's, you know, and I don't think it goes off the rails enough. I found that the ending of Cuckoo was almost weirdly reserved, considering how truly bizarre the circumstances of the story are. And it's going to be hard to talk about
without
giving things away. Although I think if I did explain them, I'm not even sure if I could either A, do it justice, or B, even really get it. I still have some questions about what's going on.
I
don't
want to give away too many
spoilers. No. Yeah. And, you know, I think that the craft on display here is enough that it's probably worth watching if you are sort of a contemporary horror completist. But I just kind of felt like things get pretty clunky at the two-thirds mark when you have not one but two characters who basically have to be Dr. Exposition and come in and very obviously lay out, this was our plan all along and this is what we've been doing, in a way that I just found ridiculous, but not in a way that I think the filmmaker necessarily intended. But yeah, I mean, I use the word atmosphere and I'll use it again. This thing has atmosphere to spare. And because of its remote setting and its, you know, hotel setting, I was thinking of The Shining in those early scenes, and that's high praise indeed. And then there's this sort of level of disorientation that comes when you're far away from home and in a country where you don't quite understand the culture or the language. So I was thinking of movies like Don't Look Now, the Nicholas Roeg film, something like The Wicker Man even, where there are characters...
The original Wicker Man.
Of course. Yeah. That's... I would assume that people weren't thinking I was referring to the remake of The Wicker Man. But there are characters sort of in the background and on the fringes of the story who do and say things that are just slightly off. Mm-hmm. And so it's just constantly kind of, you know, sending up alarm signals. So there's really good stuff in Cuckoo. But yeah, I was again, just disappointed that I don't think it comes together in the end in a satisfying way really at all. Although, you know, the first two thirds are a pretty fun ride, I think.
And I think that we can talk a little bit about what do we want and expect from horror films, because I want to be scared. I want to be frightened in some way. And so it's always the buildup to what could happen. You know, the things behind the closet door, as Dan sometimes says, that are the most frightening. So in Cuckoo, you know, the beginning of the film where you're getting all this information, you know, the setting, the parents have been there before, and now they're supposedly invited back to do some sort of architectural renovation.
And they're acting weird too.
Right. And yeah. And so we don't really know what's going on. And we have the stepsister or the half-sister who, you know, is just inexplicable and sort of her behavior.
She doesn't speak
right,
for some reason.
Exactly. Yeah. And so there was enough sort of creepiness, but it wasn't necessarily that scary. I mean, when our protagonist, Gretchen, is stalked by this figure, I mean, that was a little scary, but
it's pretty creepy.
That was pretty creepy.
But there's a difference between creepy and scary to my way of thinking.
See, I'll push back a little bit on that.
Okay, fair enough.
I also think that when you see as many horror movies as we have seen
that
over
you make
the years,
me see, you mean?
Yeah, I guess you could say that's probably true. That I couldn't tell you the last time that a movie genuinely, capital S, scared me.
Right, but so that's what I want.
But I don't know. I'm thinking too much probably about the way the movie was put together and thinking about the technique and what reminds me of other movies. I like a movie that unsettles me or kind of follows me home after the film is over, where there are images or scenes where, you know, I think that wasn't quite right. Something was off about that. Yeah. And this has a few of those. I wish that I hadn't seen the trailer because the creepiest moments are in those trailers that played before, it seems, every horror movie.
See,
I saw this
you
last
know,
year.
It's not just simply the plot of Cuckoo that becomes a problem. Think about what David Lynch can put on the screen that you look at movies like Mulholland Drive. There's a simple shot in which the movie's going out and looking in an alleyway behind a restaurant. And you're going, what is there? It doesn't make any difference. What is there? There isn't anything there.
There's a recurring shot in Twin Peaks of a ceiling fan that is filled with dread.
Exactly.
And horror.
Or there's another one in which, what's her face in Twin Peaks? Laura Palmer. Laura Palmer, in which she's coming to a house and we have all these quick cuts and there's that mysterious figure at the end of the bed. We go, what? I mean, there is a way of making a movie that is truly scary. So it is about style. But if you want to go back, one movie that scared me was The Blair Witch Project. And that's just simply because it's never explained. It's just something.
And you can put yourself in that scenario
because
we've all been camping and heard something weird outside
the tent. Exactly.
Well, okay, so when we're talking about things not being explained in Cuckoo, so we get some sense of what has happened, but it doesn't really explain totally the whole thing. And so
the why of the
correct,
thing.
Correct.
Yes.
Why? Like, why has this whole situation presented itself? And we do know that the resort owner / scientist, Koenig, is, you know, I like Dan Stevens. I thought he did a good job.
He knows how to play oily.
I agree. And I have to say, I really did like Hunter Schafer, too.
Yeah, she's good.
So there are things to like about this. Would I strongly encourage somebody to go to the theater to see it? No, depending on what you want.
Well, and I tend to go into a horror movie. I mentioned the sort of unsettling element. I also want to have a good time. I kind of want to be laughing along with it because it's so
Well, one or the other, at least.
Yeah,
I either want to be scared or laugh or both.
And this you can do both. Yeah.
Absolutely. And I just don't think that Cuckoo quite gets there. It threatens to get to that level, and it doesn't quite go over the top. There are also these themes of motherhood that keep popping up, unusual motherhood, because Gretchen keeps calling.
Or reproductive rights.
Sure. Gretchen keeps calling her mother's answering machine, which it turns out is like an old school answering machine with a cassette tape in it. They never really explain why that is because everyone else has iPhones.
Seems to be modern, right.
And she sort of has to act as a surrogate mother at one point to this stepsister that she has an uneasy relationship with. And then the methods of the creatures that come about in the last half of the movie, there's certainly elements of that kind of tie it all together.
Right.
But I don't know if it's tied together in a way that feels really all that satisfying, at
least to me. And so maybe this is the type of movie where afterward you could go and try to piece things together, mm-hmm. you know, I would say over a couple of glasses of wine. But yeah, so Cuckoo, great start, not so much finish.
Yeah, well, and Tillman Singer, this is like his second feature. I mean, he has such a great command of the frame and just the imagery in this
movie. I didn't see Lose, so I don't know what that
I was. Have seen it, and it's even weirder than this. So maybe a good double feature for you.
Yeah. At any rate, that was our discussion of the Tillman Singer film Cuckoo. This is Movies 101, and it's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to talk about Daddy-O, which stars Dakota Johnson and Sean Penn. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
Wherever life takes you, take Spokane Public Radio with you. You can stream your favorite public radio station on your smartphone, computer, smart speaker, or any mobile device. Visit SpokanePublicRadio.org and click Listen Live. Pick KPBX, KSFC, or KPBZ and start listening. Or just ask your Amazon Echo or Google Home smart speaker to play Spokane Public Radio. Listen live to Spokane Public Radio at work, home, or wherever you go.
And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discuss the film Cuckoo. Let's now turn to a film featuring two people, a young woman and an older cab driver, who come to a meeting of minds during an overly long ride from the airport to her Manhattan apartment. The film is Daddy-O, a title that has any number of meanings. Written and directed by the playwright Christy Hall in her first feature film outing, it stars Dakota Johnson as a young woman, identified ironically only as girly, who has just flown in to New York City, hails a cab driven by Clark, played by Sean Penn. The two couldn't be more different. She's stylish and professional, he's rough and pure working class, and at first nothing out of the ordinary occurs between them. He's concerned with driving, as those who brave New York traffic, even at night, which this is, are typically forced to. She, meanwhile, is preoccupied with her phone, the specifics of which will become more and more clear as the movie progresses. Eventually, they do connect, much as two characters would in a stage play. And over the film's 100-minute running time, the length of time it takes for this particular cab ride, histories are revealed, secrets are shared, and two different souls come together in a not always comfortable but ultimately meaningful way. As an exercise in human psychology, Daddy-O may not provide us with any profound revelations, but as an exercise in acting, especially between two-time Oscar-winning Penn and the better-than-she's-ever-been Johnson, the film does a pretty good job of keeping us interested throughout.
When we talk about Daddy-O, there are two different ways to sort of frame this. One is to look at the director, Christy Hall, first-time director. So I think that there are some things that we might want to talk about with respect to her filmmaking prowess. And then, of course, the performances by Sean Penn and Dakota Johnson. And so anybody who's been to a big city, New York in particular, can appreciate, you know, sort of back in the day, and this felt more like that than currently, when you would get into a cab, you would have no idea if you were going to end up with a chatty driver, if you were going to end up with someone who was otherwise preoccupied with trying to keep up with traffic. More recently, when you get into a taxi, you're on your phone, the driver's talking to other people on his various devices and so forth. And so this feels old school, like retro in many respects, because these people do engage one another in a conversation. Although, as Dan pointed out, girly, Dakota Johnson's phone does continue to interrupt their discussion. I really liked the way this rolled out because they start talking about the typical things that you would talk about with a driver in a cab. So Daddy-O, you know, rolls out kind of slowly and they're talking about, you know, New York-y kinds of things and credit cards and so forth. And then something happens. There's a traffic accident. And so they realize that they're going to be stuck for the longer than usual 45-minute drive from JFK into Manhattan. And so they have to sort of decide, is this going to be a silent period? Are they going to go deeper? And so, of course, because this is a film and because we need to do something other than look at our phones while watching it, they decide to sort of take this to the next level. And this film is shot in such a way that it's just dialogue and the faces of these two people in this car. I mean, occasionally you'll see sights from outside, from the Manhattan, you know, streets or skyline or whatever. But for the most part, it's focused on these two individuals. And as Dan said, I don't think Dakota Johnson has ever been better. And Sean Penn is Sean Penn, yeah. But in this gruff kind of lovable way, you know, he's sometimes the jackass and sometimes he's the sort of gracious, caring father figure. And I saw this by myself in the theater, and I did appreciate it so much that I wanted both Dan and Nathan to see it. And we have seen some other films besides Daddy-O that all take place within a car. Locke, I'm thinking of.
Mm-hmm. With Tom Hardy.
Right. Yeah. But I think that this is, because of its slow reveal, because of the way it's filmed, because of the performances, well worth seeing.
Well, this is, you know, a movie that was developed to be a stage play because...
And it feels that way.
Yeah, Christy Hall, the writer-director, comes from the theater. And I was also just thinking now, as you were talking through it, about the movie Janet Planet that we reviewed a few weeks ago, which was another feature film debut by a playwright. And I thought that movie had a much stronger sense of style
and cinematic
language than this movie did. Because I think that for something like Daddy-O, I mean, these limited character, one-setting movies are really hard to pull off.
I agree.
And there have not been very many of them for that reason. I mean, of course, the ultimate example is My Dinner with Andre, where we're just listening to these these two guys talk over dinner. But yeah, but something like Locke, with Tom Hardy alone in a car, you never leave the car, you're just in there with him. I was also thinking of that movie Buried with Ryan Reynolds, where he's buried alive and you're stuck in the coffin with him. So there kind of has to be like some kind of inherent drama or interest to the location itself, a reason why these people are stuck in a car. And sometimes it can feel like a contrivance. With Daddy-O, I kept thinking all the way through, you know, if this had been a stage play, there's something about the abstraction of the stage that allows for a lot of suspension of disbelief. And I also think there's something to, you know, the electricity of being in the room with the actors as it's happening. And so without that, I thought a lot of this felt really contrived to me. I never really found these two characters to be all that convincing as characters. All I saw were the actors. And you're totally right. They're both really good in this. But I just didn't find it convincing. And I think the revelations that happen in that third act that you alluded to, I think they sort of betray the idea that this is anything more than an exercise for these actors. And it's a challenging exercise, don't get me wrong. But, you know, I don't really think it offers anything new in the way of its observations about gender dynamics and age gaps and power imbalances in relationships. So, yeah, ultimately, this just didn't really pull itself off for me. And I kind of wanted the ride to be over a lot earlier than it was.
So you wish the accident had not occurred?
Well, of course, I don't wish any accident to occur. But yeah, I was like, let's wrap this
up. Well, and this is so intriguing to me because Daddy-O, this film, I really liked.
Yeah.
And I did not like Janet Planet.
Right, yeah.
So it is interesting how these smaller films with limited casts and setting can either resonate or work for you mm-hmm. or not. Because, yeah, for whatever reason, this did.
And I don't think it was so much the differing style between Janet Planet and Daddy-O that was the difference for you, Mary Pat. I think that it was the characters, because you had no respect for the character, the main character, the woman.
Well, you didn't
Janet
believe
Planet.
You didn't
yeah.
believe them
you
at
know,
all.
And,
yeah.
and it,
no.
you know,
which I did.
And,
so right. yeah, I don't know.
But you did much more appreciate the characters in Daddy-O. And I think we need to point out that ultimately, whatever goes on between those two, and as you're right, Mary Pat, sometimes the Sean Penn character, we go, yeah, hey, he's speaking real truths here. And other times it's like, dude, you're a boomer jerk. You know,
this is radio.
Yes, this is radio. And you don't like him. But when it comes down to it, there's really no resolution here. I mean, we don't know what's going to happen with her. We think we might know, but then again, maybe not. So...
And Daddy-O, I mean, if you talk about trying to film something that involves two characters in a cab for X minutes, I like the cinematography. I mean, I thought that the cinematographer did a good job in Daddio with sort of looking at this from different perspectives. I mean, we focus on their faces, but we still see the outside. We still see reflections. We still see Sean Penn's character looking in the mirror, looking back at Gurley.
You know, when we're talking about these kind of claustrophobic scenes, we mentioned Locke. I want to point out, we go back to the 7-minute Indianapolis scene in Jaws, where it's three characters in one little cabin on a boat. And
you're going to need a bigger boat.
Well, yeah. But in this particular scene, Robert Shaw absolutely owns the stage. And that's an amazing scene. I used to show that in class, just to say, this is what a master filmmaker can do.
Well, in this movie, Daddio has monologues like that, where it's probably three pages of dialogue. And Sean Penn, I mean, again, he can read anything and you're drawn in to a certain degree. But I don't know. I just can't quite put my finger on it. I can't quite explain why I felt this way. But it all just felt like pages of dialogue. And I have had unexpected heart-to-heart conversations with, like, Lyft drivers or cab
strangers,
drivers before,
right,
where they say something and then you say something and all of a sudden they're talking about, you know, these personal experiences that they've had and you're relating to them in a way that, you know,
growing
you're
up
just
in
trying,
the Sudan or someplace,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly, where you're just trying to get home, but they also maybe need someone to talk to. It's that kind of, like, cab driver as therapist sort of thing. So I understand where this is coming from, but to me it just felt like dialogue on a page and not, like, real people talking to one another.
And so I think this is payback for all the icky horror films that you've made me watch that I insisted that the two of you go see Daddio. So again, I think it's fair to say, obviously, this is not going to work for everyone. And maybe I identified more with the Sean Penn baby boomer character than with the, you know, millennial Dakota Johnson character. But you got to admit, she was really good.
Yeah, she's good in this.
They're both really good.
Yeah, yeah.
As an exercise in acting, it is really good.
Yeah, agreed.
At any rate, that was our discussion of the film Daddio. This is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster, and early in the show, Nathan Weinbender, Murray Pat Truthart, and I discussed the film Cuckoo. Let's take this moment to thank Cassie Fox for both producing and engineering the show, and we thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that cinema has to offer, wherever we can find it. Until then, consider these words from the filmmaker/author Stephen D. Katz. It's something of a paradox that film, the art that most resembles our daydreams, is one of the most difficult to bring into existence. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.